men might be under the impression that their wives should just get over it, right? Just stop talking about it. Like, I've already explained. I've already apologized. Why do you keep bringing this up?
Move on.
Right? And sometimes there's even religious messages that can be put on betrayed partners. They're like, you should forgive and forget. And that's not how trauma works. It is stored in the body until it is processed. It's not just time that heals all wounds. It's processing over time that heals all wounds.
Hey friends, welcome to the Betrayal Recovery Transformation Podcast, where we talk about all things betrayal, all things recovery, and all things transformation. I am your host, Chris Rocha, here with my beach chair bestie, Jen Howie. How are you, Jen?
You say beach chair bestie as if we've gone to a ton of beaches together.
I know, right? That's weird.
We've only gone to one.
And a few riverside beaches, which kind of doesn't, that's not the image I was going for. It's just, it's cold here finally. And I was thinking about that one time when we went to Belize and sat on the beach. And that just sounds really nice right now.
Yes. We are recording from Oregon. And if any of you listeners have been to Oregon, you know full well that you don't go into the beach in Oregon. You just don't. That's not a thing you do. So, well, today's guest is also from Oregon and oddly enough lives, I don't know, maybe half a mile from my house. And we discovered this as he and I were taking some continuing education with Carol Jurgensen Sheets' material, The Help Her Heal. And in this class, it was a class on Help Them Heal. And often referred to as IRCAM. And anyway, so I met Anthony in our breakout session, and I hadn't known him before this moment. And we had several breakout sessions together and we got to know each other. And then Chris, you met him separately, which happens with so many of our guests. We both keep meeting these people separately. And then we'll say, hey, have you heard of so-and-so? I'm like, yeah, I just did a breakout session, you know, or a class with him. And so this has been a lot of fun. Dr. Anthony Walker is here today and he's going to share quite a few things with us, but let's first do an introduction. Hi. I call you Anthony. What do you prefer? Do you prefer Dr. Walker?
It's great.
Okay.
Former students refer me by Dr. Walker. So.
Okay. That sounds good. So Anthony, you are here in Bend, Oregon with me. We have never crossed paths as far as I know, but here we are on the podcast together. Tell us a little bit about yourself. Do you have a family? Tell us a little bit about what you do and some of your credentials.
Yeah. So I do have a family, so happily married. I have one beautiful, talented, smart wife who keeps me on the straight and narrow. She's very organized, and I benefit greatly from that. And I have a 15-year-old daughter, super athletic, very sweet, very kind, and I just get proud papa feelings just watching her compete. She's awesome at everything she does, so... I have a doctorate in human development and family science from the University of Texas. So that was hot and fun. But Austin is very similar to Bend in kind of there's a lot going on there. And so I spent 8 years as a professor at Indiana State University. So teaching undergraduates in that program and mentoring them and doing research. And that was lots of fun. The mentoring was my favorite part. But we, after COVID, we were like, everybody's in the Pacific Northwest and we're tired of being like so far isolated. And so we decided to actually, prayed about it and decided, okay, we're going to up and move and we're back. And I actually graduated from Pendleton High School and my wife's from Oregon as well. So I've been here before and really got into life coaching about 3 years ago. Went through my own recovery program and got into that as a mentor and then got trained as a life coach and then was part of various companies. And one of them said, hey, you need to go to ABSATS and get ABSATS training. And I was like, I don't know what that is, but I guess I'm going to go do that. And it was just mind-blowing, opening just the impact of betrayal trauma. Like, that was just, that hurt to sit through that and just to see and understand a little bit more, like, what the impact was. And so through that, I'm a certified partner coach candidate, which means partner-sensitive, trauma-informed life coach. You know, we did the IRCM training together. I was trained by Carol Sheets to present Help Her Heal, which I love. And I just finished Eddie Capirucci's Inner Child training a couple of days ago. So I kind of am a training addict. So I love learning. I love, like, adding things. And so just constantly getting skills and techniques to be able to help people as they navigate this really difficult, unexpected, isolating journey.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that you are the only male certified coach trained through APSATS in the state of Oregon. So kudos on you for just plowing the way for that to be a thing for those of us that live here. Thank you. Yeah, so Carol Jurgensen Sheets is known better by some people as Carol the Coach. She's written a couple of books, of course, that we know of. Help Her Heal is one of those books. And I'd love to hear from you, Anthony, about how you are incorporating that, or at least her strategies, into your coaching with men.
I first got trained in Help Her Heal because, as part of an APSATS trained coach, there's required supervision. And so I was in a supervision meeting with Carol, and she said, you need to get trained in this. And so I'm like, okay, I went and did that and absolutely loved it. One of the things that I really like about Help Her Heal is it gives concrete strategies for the men, for the acting out partners, to be able to communicate and to be able to overcome their shame and to be able to address conflict in the relationship in a healthy way. And sometimes men can feel like, okay, I don't know what to say, right? So if I don't say anything, then I'm stonewalling and not engaged. If I say something, then I'm, you know, deflecting, or I'm being defensive, or I'm gaslighting. And it's not to say that doesn't happen or I'm explaining, but for them, sometimes it can feel like I don't know what to say at all. And so Help Her Heal provides a structure, a formula to follow that they can show up, they can use and show up how they want to in the relationship. But it also makes clear that's what they have control over, is how they show up in the relationship. They have no control over, like, the impact of how their partner, their wife will respond. And I tell them in groups, you could do the skill perfectly and it could blow up, and you could stumble through it and make a mess of it and it could land beautifully. Like, so it's how you want to show up each day in your relationship.
So good.
The Help Her Heal material deals a ton with building empathy, as you've said, and that can be really challenging in the context of betrayal trauma. And when we were talking on the phone last week, Anthony, you and I, we had come up with the analogy of that trust for the betrayed spouse and building, you know, trusting even that empathy, that it's real, that he gets it, would be a little bit like you went out on a frozen lake and you're so excited, got your ice skates ready to go, and unbeknownst to you, it wasn't as frozen as you thought and you fell through. That's going to create a trauma of, I can't trust this. That's scary now. So stepping back out onto that lake and trusting that it's solid and the ice is going to hold you, you know, it's just risky to do it again, even though, you know, the experts are like, oh, it's all good. It's all good. Look, all the work is done. You can trust this. It's solid. In this course with Help Her Heal, you know, men are taught emotional attunement as a skill. You and I talked about that. Can you explain how emotional attunement works in practice, especially for those who may be new to the concept, like a betrayed spouse?
Yeah. So it totally makes sense that there would be that mistrust. And Carol even talks about the the term foreboding joy. So where that's where if you maybe see some different behaviors in your spouse, and you may challenge that or not believe that, like, I'm not going out on that ice, right? Even if you say it looks safe, like, I'm not going out. And we tell the men to expect that, and we help build them up to be able to continue forward. The emotional attunement is a challenge for them in that they have to become emotionally attuned to themselves, recognize and give empathy to themselves in order to better do that for their wives. And so we help them in the program work through and stay out of shame and not be conflict avoidant. And part of that is recognizing and saying to themselves, not to their spouses, whatever reaction or trigger is going on, like, that's 10% in the present and 90% in the past. And that's like saying to them, that's not who I am anymore, right? So I'm a different person, and sort of detaching the reaction, the emotional reaction, from who they are as a person. And when they see, so we want them to engage, I tell them to be firemen, right? So instead of running away from the fire, like, you lit that fire. So you were an arsonist to start. So you need to put on your gear, right? Protective gear, stay out of shame, stay out of defensiveness, and go towards your wife when she is feeling however she's feeling, and sit with her in that fire and hold her in that fire until it's burned down. And you may need to, like, okay, now I'm done. I need to go fix my gear and patch it up, and then do it again over and over and over again. And so one of the skills that they learn in Help Her Heal is AVR. So acknowledge, validate, and reassure. And so we teach them to pay attention. One, right? So what's going on with her? Acknowledge the feelings. Acknowledge, you know, is she triggered? Is she not? What's going on? And actually verbalize that. So I see that you are feeling this way, or asking, are you triggered? Are you feeling a certain way? Which is their body screaming, no, danger, stay away. And I said, you got to be the fireman. You got to go into the fire and then validate that. So don't say, I understand that, like, they're that, like, gets, I said, that'll get you in trouble. Put an X through that. Don't ever say understand, because you're never going to fully get it. But Your responsibility is to do your best to get it as much as you possibly can. So the validation is, it makes sense that you would feel afraid, or that you would feel triggered, or that you would feel angry, and connecting that verbally because of the acting out behavior that I did in the past, right? It makes sense. Even if it doesn't make sense to him, and it might not make sense to her, that still helps, right? It's kind of like it helps bring some understanding and some calming, and help her feel like, you know, sometimes it can feel like you're really reactive and like even sometimes crazy. And this helps bring that, it normalizes it. It says, this is a trauma response, right? There's nothing wrong with you. This is a natural reaction to trauma. So the validation, it makes sense you would feel that way. And then the reassurance. So, like, I'm here now. We're in the present. We're working together. You're safe. And I tell the guys, if you are not doing the work and staying, like, if you're actively acting out, the reassurance isn't going to land. Like, so you may just have to do the acknowledge and the validate over and over and over again.
I have so many thoughts here, Anthony. I have so many thoughts. So one of them is, you had mentioned, I could, in the validate phase, where I can see why you would be triggered, and you're validating this. Something that I would add to it, my husband used to do that, and it used to irritate the kajibers out of me, because he would use the word that I'm triggered, and that would trigger me. And what we learned in this process, which I know that you also teach your people as well, is first find out what she is experiencing, and then validate that. Don't validate what you perceive her to be experiencing is key, because you can't connect if you're validating something that isn't landing with her. You know what I mean?
That's a second layer of awareness.
Yeah.
That's not innate. to think that way.
No, yeah, because my husband spent a lot of time mind reading. We always make jokes about he has a degree in mind reading, and he really should have failed that class because he's terrible at it. So I wish that he would ask me what I'm experiencing and then validate that experience rather than his own narrative in his head. So, but I love that you said under the AVR about being present. Because a lot of people under reassurance will say, I'm going to blank, I'm going to blank, I'm going to blank. Those can often feel like empty promises. And so I really appreciate, Anthony, that you say to stay present. I'm here now, or look me in the eyes. We're working through this together. You know, that is co-regulation at its best, right? Mm-hmm. That is so, so, so good. I really appreciate that. And then the last thing I was going to say about this, and I'm not really sure how I'll segue out of this one, but
I got a question when you're done.
So. Okay, great. Fantastic. You mentioned that him having to have empathy for himself. And I remember being really irritated at my husband's ability to have empathy for himself and not for me. And because I wanted to hit him over the head with shame. I didn't, but there was such an imbalance of validation on my end that anytime I heard him validating himself, it just hit me wrong. It was very, very frustrating. So I think that's an important piece for the betrayed spouse to understand and to try to create room for. If you have a spouse who lacks empathy, there's a good chance you do, they first have to learn how to have empathy for themselves before they can apply it to others. And so for those of you that are struggling with your spouse who is learning this for themselves, just make room for it, because eventually it is going to create an atmosphere where they can have empathy for you as well. But I know that was hard for me, and I'm sure it's hard for somebody else. Okay, Chris.
Well, just as you were talking about the validate part, I'm just wanting to make sure I understand this clearly. So with the emotional attunement skill that you teach men in this program, as I'm imagining it, if the struggling spouse can learn to emotionally attune to his partner, emotional attunement leads to empathy, correct? It's a tool that will lead to greater empathy. In which case, then I would think that as the betrayed spouse, if my husband is more emotionally attuned to me, and he's now able to wrap his mind and heart around real empathy, then I'm going to feel less alone. I'm going to feel like he's with me, and he's now kind of partnering with me in my experience. And that's going to make, instead of him pushing me out onto that frozen lake, to bring that metaphor back, he's now locking arms with me and walking out there with me and saying, hey, I believe this is safe now, but we're going to find out together. And if you go down, I'm going down with you. You're not alone in this. Accurate description? Okay.
So you're in it together. And so that's part of what I talk about, guys, is, you know, it's not, you guys aren't, you're on the same team, right? And so what you want to do is, with this, you want to join with your partner against the pain, against the trauma, instead of like being in conflict against one another. And so if you can join together against that, that will strengthen your couple relationship. It will make it so like she doesn't feel so alone. Like he finally gets it a little bit.
Yeah. And that's a lot. That little bit is a lot.
It could be so impactful just to feel like he gets it a little bit. So
yeah,
hugely. Yeah. You listeners can't see this, but I'm wiping tears away. Just that, the thought of that. I wish that somebody had told us about emotional attunement. I've never even heard that term until entering this process, and actually very recently. So that, I love that concept. That's what women want. That's what men want who have been through betrayal. They want their partner to be able to attune with them and to, it almost takes away that vengeance piece of, I want him to hurt like I'm hurting. I don't know. Maybe not. But
and then there's and then there then there's women like me who the second he starts to attune, I'm irritated that he's so attuned and getting so healed, and I'm over here still struggling. So there's all there are
still afraid of that lake.
There's so many components. I actually really love both the lake analogy and the firefighting analogy.
Yeah.
That is so good because it is natural for all of us to want to run away from a fire, right? That is a natural instinct that we all have for survival. And so it helps create this picture that, all right, husband or, you know, spouse who did these things, I can see why you want to run away, but listen, there is a fire to put out, you know, and start to ignite some of those protective vasopressin type of, you know, chemicals in someone to move towards protecting even the very person that they hurt. I don't know, Anthony, if you came up with a you are an arsonist scenario there, but holy smokes, that is so good. So being that many of our spouses are arsonists and there is a fire taking place and there is this instinct to run away and we're trying and you're trying to teach men to move toward their spouse in these moments, tell us a little bit about some of the key misconceptions that men might have about betrayal to help them put on that gear and move towards that fire.
So men might be under the impression that their wives should just get over it, right? Just stop talking about it. Like, I've already explained, I've already apologized. Why do you keep bringing this up?
Move on.
Right? And sometimes there's even religious messages that can be put on betrayed partners that are like, you should forgive and forget. And that's not how trauma works. It is stored in the body until it is processed. It's not just time that heals all wounds. It's processing over time that heals all wounds. So definitely helping them to understand that it's their responsibility, right, to help. And they can't control her outcomes. And so that's a challenge.
What do you say to the guy who says, well, that was in the past and you keep going back to the past and that's not helping? I mean, I don't know what advice you'd give the betrayed spouse in that scenario, but what would you say to the guy who's undoubtedly is making her listen to this podcast right now?
So that guy, I would have a conversation around how trauma works. And so basically, when we have a traumatic experience, it's stored in the portion of our brain that is also responsible for, like, keeping us breathing and for keeping us alive. So the fight, flight, freeze, or fawn, and that part of our brain, it can't tell time. And so something that happened, you know, a year ago, 5 years ago, when that gets triggered, it feels like it's a burn. Like, it's just still the same as it was when it first happened.
Like, it just happened.
Yeah. And so that gets triggered in day-to-day interactions, and it can be triggered by anything. It's his responsibility to help create an environment where that healing can move forward.
That's so good. It might be the past for him because of his ability to either disassociate or compartmentalize, but it's the present for her.
Yeah, that's something that I tell the guys.
Yeah, it's acknowledging that, yeah, I know you think this is in the past. This is actually present for me.
Your past is her present.
Yeah.
Ooh, your past is her present. That needs to be a bumper sticker. It needs to be on a Hydro Flask somewhere. Yeah, that's good.
Coming to a Hydro Flask near you. Chris is creating stickers as we speak.
Powerful.
Yeah.
Okay, so I'm still trying to absorb. Seriously, it's like I'm listening to this conversation and I am reimagining or reprocessing D-Day and the weeks that followed with this new information and what a difference it would have made. In fact, I'm almost thinking, Jen, we need to go back to episode one, to our survival guide, and maybe add an addendum there. Like, hey, here's a...
We'll just do an updated one.
Yes.
Survival guide 2.0.
Yes. Oh, I love that. Done. Yeah. Like, here's a few more things. Find someone that can teach you about emotional attunement. Get into a help or heal group. We know a guy. So this is such, it's like clicking. It's not revolutionary information, but we haven't talked about this yet on the podcast, and this is so good. I'm so glad you're here, Anthony. So betrayal trauma often causes, you know, deep emotional wounds in partners, as we've discussed. And so now I'm curious, how do you help men navigate their feelings of shame and defensiveness so they can focus on healing their relationship and not just themselves? Like how can a man who's pursuing healing deal with the toxic shame and that heavy embarrassment that they feel and be present for her at the same time? That it seems counterintuitive. Like everything in him is going to fight to hide and flee. He can't self-medicate anymore like he used to be. That's a lot for a guy. And I know it takes time to learn. It's like walking a tightrope. Gosh, this episode is full of so many metaphors. This episode is brought to you by all the metaphors. Yeah, that's like walking above a chasm, holding one of those poles on a tightrope. That's a lot.
It's a real challenge. I often will do an informal poll in my Help or Heal groups. Who is conflict avoidant here? And like everybody, right? That's often the people we end up working with. And a lot of that can have to do with not knowing what to say, or it could do with unprocessed trauma that they're not aware. And it could do with some other things too that are a little bit more maybe nefarious. But within the Help or Heal, they have sort of shame busters. So you write out, okay, what are some of the messages that internally that he's saying? Because the thoughts lead to the feelings, right? So internally, he's got some thoughts that are saying, maybe I'm a terrible person, or you know, who would do such a thing, or I'm not worth anything. And putting that up against, okay, well, what is the truth, right? What is fact compared to what that message is telling you? And so that can help bring him out of this shame spiral and say, okay, well, here's what's actual fact. And sometimes in her betrayal, she will say things that challenge or that are maybe not the kindest presentation. And we say, that's the trauma talking. And you're going to expect that. And we pair that with, again, the he's got a bunch of different things that he can memorize, but they're all essentially related to, okay, I'm not my behaviors, right? I'm not what I do. And then you have the religious piece to that. You can add to the fact I'm a child of God. And whether you stumble or whether you're standing up, your value has not changed to God. And that's something that we try to help them hold on to stay out of that shame, and remember that this is about past him, sort of externalizing, that's not who I am anymore. I'm moving forward. And so all of these reactions, he doesn't have to necessarily take on internally, but he does have to take it on in joining with her against the pain.
Yeah. And so I think it's probably a reasonable expectation then for women to understand, this is why we say pursue your own healing. I like that you said detach from the outcomes. As the betrayed spouse, we have to detach from the struggling spouse's outcome and vice versa, because in the beginning, we just have to take it upon ourselves to stabilize. We can't depend on our spouses to fix it for us. And it's going to take time for him to get out of that shame and to learn how to handle conflict and handle facing the situation. And it's going to take time for her to be able to make space for that. But it's something that we can't expect in the beginning. This is why we all talk about gathering community and how important that is, because it's like both people are burned in that fire, and we gotta take care of ourselves first before we can reach out and even help our spouse through the situation. So reasonable expectations. About what point do you see men, and I know everyone's unique and the trauma we bring into relationships is different, but is there an average as to when you start to see men kind of get to a point where they can help her heal?
They definitely need sustained sobriety to help that change in their brain, because in active addiction, it's almost like they have blinders on or dirty glasses where they can't see reality. They can't see clearly the impact that their actions are having. And there's self-deception that had to go on in order for them to maintain and protect those behaviors. And so part of recovery is this process of, it's almost rediscovering, seeing a little bit more clearly their actions and their choices and the impact just over and over again. And it's really uncomfortable. And so I tell them, if it's uncomfortable, then it's the right direction for you. Because when you start, it's okay, I'm going to lose my marriage. I need to like do everything. And there's lots of fear to try and protect that. And that motivation is great, but it's also going to be temporary because it has to come from inside. Like, I am committed to my own healing and my own change and my own recovery. And my spouse is going to benefit from that. But there's a struggle with feeling selfish. Like, oh, but I want to help. I don't want to take this time away to do my studies, and I need to go to groups. And it does take away time from the family and from the spouse, but it's absolutely necessary, because if sobriety isn't maintained and recovery isn't, nothing else is really going to matter in the end.
It's so fascinating. This is exactly what Dan ran into, is he felt selfish if he did those things, and he felt selfish if he had self-care, but yet his actions were so incredibly selfish. And in my mind, it was really hard to understand, okay, you won't do these, you know, quote unquote selfish things that are helpful, but you'll certainly do these selfish things that are really unhelpful to our marriage. And so that's when I really knew things were starting to shift, when he could do that internal work and understand that selfishness was indeed an issue, but not in the areas where he thought it was. And I think, I mean, I'm just, you know, armchair psychology here, but with my husband, but I think that a lot of his behaviors were a lack of what he thought was selfish, that he wasn't applying into his life. You know, there's all that family of origin, and thoughts and beliefs create emotions that drive behavior. All of those things were still a component, but I think part of those components was he was fulfilling needs or desires or things that were inside of him. He was fulfilling those in areas that were unhealthy, and he had to learn how to fulfill himself in areas that were healthy. And that was such a huge catalyst change for him. And even to this day, I mean, you know, we're 13 years into our recovery story. Even to this day, it's still a challenge for him. And you're talking about that shift, Chris. You were asking, well, kind of when does that shift happen? And I think it depends on the person. It depends on how deeply rooted that neural pathway is, how deeply rooted that message that's on repeat is. Because at the end of the day, there's just the voice that they hear the most, you know what I mean, when they go to bed at night. And so it can be difficult for many women to hold space for him to discover, you know, these things about himself. And so it's a painful process, I think, for all of us. And Chris, you had mentioned earlier, as we got started, we were kind of, you know, we kind of threw out this question about spiritual warfare and its impact on daily life. And we kind of threw out this idea, so how can couples recognize and combat these spiritual attacks on their marriage? I'll throw this question out maybe to both of you, Chris, and maybe even you want to start. No, you know, not putting you under the spotlight, but let's talk about that just for a quick second. What does spiritual warfare look like, and how can we recognize it and combat some of those spiritual attacks, really? Because this is an identity issue, right? Mm-hmm. And as an identity coach, Chris, you know, you kind of speak on these things as well.
It's the therapy and theology piece when we're healing, that there's a partnership there as husband and wife that is ordained. It's our birthright in the Lord. It's a covenant relationship that we're in, et cetera. So I would say that, you know, he's my husband, but he's also my brother in Christ. He's more than just my husband to me. And so I think that it's important for us to recognize that, yeah, we need to deal with shame, and we need to understand the brain science. We need to understand what's happening when we're triggered and how to talk ourselves off the ledge. There are tools for that are very practical and real. But there's also a spiritual component that we are, you know, what was God's intention for marriage, and that we are a living parable, living example of God and his church and the bride of Christ. I think it's important for us to be able to discern what is as practical, what is physical, what's happening to us that therapy can cover, and then where is that spiritual component coming in? Because if Satan can destroy the marriage, if he can destroy the family, then he's winning. That's his goal. He take us down, render us useless however he can. So I think that spiritual warfare is absolutely a component, especially when it comes to attacking marriages and destroying family units. So I know that Jeremiah 33:3 says, basically, ask me, come to me and ask me, and I will teach you and show you mysterious things you couldn't have known otherwise. That's my paraphrase. So I think that we can go to the Lord and ask him for discernment. We can, like Solomon asked for wisdom, give us extra measures of these things so that we can discern what is a spiritual attack and what is something that is an area of weakness in our marriage that we need to work on. I think spiritual warfare is an effective, important component in our healing process.
Yeah, I think we really have to consider the impact of spiritual warfare in this arena, because spiritual warfare is all around us. We know that we live in a world where that is ultimately what we're fighting. Or as much as we are fighting against this, not fighting, but, you know, as much as we are battling, I guess, you know, in this marriage and with this person and what they have done to us, there is such a spiritual component that has taken place. And for us to completely ignore that, I understand that there's been some spiritual bypass for many of us in this process, but to completely ignore it is dangerous, because our souls are at war. And the enemy says he comes to kill, steal, kill, and destroy. And if we don't bring some awareness to that within our own spiritual being, I think that I love that, Chris, that, you know, I was about to paraphrase what you paraphrased. I'm not going to even try. Everybody go watch your Bible moment with Chris on Instagram, Watermark Coaching, you know, they're wonderful. She does a really great job on understanding the Bible. But to really remove the spiritual aspect out of this, fully believe makes our healing relatively incomplete, because I know full well when I am in that place where I am in touch with the Holy Spirit, where I am in the Word, my husband's actions and slowness in healing does not impact me even remotely the same. But I will say that you have to get out of that trauma phase sometimes to even access some of that. I'm not saying wait till you're out of you know, your limbic system or out of trauma to address spiritual things. I'm just saying that with the process, as long as it takes, the spiritual aspect is an ongoing thing that we are going to have from this on this side of heaven for the rest of our lives. So to not just completely ignore it and understand that that there is a bigger war going on, and it is the war for our soul, for our heart, for our mind. So just want to throw that out there, because I ignored it. And I honestly almost walked away from my faith completely in this process. And having been through that now, and having coming back to Jesus, and having coming back to understand who Jesus is and how amazing he is, because he provides all those things I wish my husband had. If I had had that concept and understood that concept earlier on, I probably wouldn't have had to relive a lot of the things that I did as my husband was walking out his journey. I just did not have capacity for my husband's journey, because I did not understand the spiritual warfare aspect of all of this.
So speaking to more the men's perspective or experience, having ideas that pop in your head that aren't according to your values, that didn't come from you. That didn't come from God. Taking on self-blame or shame around that, that's not necessarily yours. Now, what you do with that thought, that's what you have responsibility for. And so so address that. And then kind of along the same lines of speaking to identity, I mean, that's how Satan attacked Christ.
Yes.
To get him to deny his identity. And where there might be this, these ideas of, I'm a monster, or I'm like, what kind of terrible person could do these sorts of things? Taking that on and having that be in your head a lot, that could also, you know, that's not something that God would put in your head. So those are messages that are intended to destroy and to distort, and recognizing them for what they are, and then using the tools that are available to you to clean out the inner vessel, so that you can, you know, see clearly.
You just hit all the strategies, the tools that you teach men through this process. And I'm curious, as you've worked with men for how many years now have you been teaching this?
Help or Heal, I've been teaching for about a year and a half.
About a year and a half. And I know you've taught other things along the way, and you're well-versed in the different processes and the different tools that are out there. So as you've taught men these strategies that are included in Help or Heal, are there any success stories that stand out? What's the result you see when the guys put in the hard work consistently over time?
Yeah. So kind of two parts. One, when the guys come in, I make very clear, you need to have a support network for you where you can get your validation and you can get your encouragement, because you know, you've lit that fire in her and she's in no place to like to validate anything you're doing. And in fact, she's going to challenge it, and just expect that and get ready for it. And that way they can feel like they've got a safe space. They can feel like they are able to be encouraging to one another. But I had, there was a fellow that was married more than 6 years and he didn't ever know what to say and felt he was constantly under attack and being reminded of what he had done. And he came to a group one day and said for the first time, he was able to actually acknowledge and validate his wife's pain. And it was a joining experience for him. And that's so powerful in the daily struggle to have him be able to know, oh, I can do something. I can say something that makes the pattern a little different. And for her to feel, okay, a little tiny bit. And another one where he had, for the first time, been able to, again, acknowledge and validate. And his wife said, there's nothing I can say to criticize that. That was exactly how I was feeling. And it landed. And these were guys that would come in week to week really down and really discouraged. And they've been doing this for years. And they finally got a win. And there was such hope and celebration in the group.
You're building a bridge instead of building a wall. To be able to be understood that way by the person that hurt you, it would be so, it is so empowering when it happens. It is so mending and so healing. And it does lend toward that sincerity, ability, durability that we've talked about, when he's sincerely sorry. And then the ability stage is when he's doing the things that he said he was going to do when he was so sincere in his sorrow. And then the durability is them doing those things over a long period of time. So it's a fruit. It's a measurable when the spouse can empathize with you and can validate you and then reassure you effectively and sincerely. That just lends to that durability stage where that trust is rebuilt and we can dare to risk to trust again. I love that. I love hearing those success stories.
I do too.
I'm so excited too. They're like, yes, this is why we do this.
That's why we do this. Yes. I love it. And also I got to say that the group experience has to be so much more powerful. I know many men who have done the work of Help or Heal individually or even just with their therapist, but it's a whole different ball game when you get into a group and you're hearing the collective experiences, you're sharing the answers to questions, there's feedback, there's a collaboration going on to be validated within that group, but also those shared experiences are so powerful. I bet it's a whole different level of healing in a group than it is individually. Yes? You find that to be true?
Yeah, I find that the skills that we learn are important in the group, but the brotherhood that is formed is just as important. And they will support and they will challenge. Like when it's like, oh, I don't know if I can do this anymore. Yeah, keep going. This works. This is what you got to do. And so they lift one another up.
Beautiful.
So it's so fun to see.
So for the men who are listening, who might be resistant to engaging in this process, what advice or encouragement do you have for them for overcoming that resistance and really stepping into this really, really important healing work?
Yeah. Like what Chris was saying, I've spoken with and worked with guys that, okay, yeah, I bought the book and didn't read it, or I bought it and I just kind of like filled out some of the stuff real quick. And there's power in a group. There's power in accountability to the group, because we have check-ins and we have homework and we see like how did applying the skills work in this week. Power in not feeling like you are alone in your journey. And it's so encouraging and hope infusing to be able to know and recognize that there's other people in similar situations and we're we're making progress and having a class to show up to and a financial investment helps for the guys to be like, okay, I've invested in this. I need to make time for it. And they do. And if they're not doing it in a group setting, a lot of that's missing.
Where can people find you to, I was just about to say, so women who listen to our podcast can send this to their husband so they can rush over to the website and sign up for one of your classes. Where do people find you?
A couple of places. So I can be found at coachanthonywalker.com. I also can be found at intensivehope.com in the coaching section of that. And the absats.org has a directory where I benefit from having an A at the front of my name. So I'm at the top, near the top of the list.
That is awesome. A benefit.
I'm changing my name.
Right? I went from a maiden name of Adams to Rocha. So I lost my place in line. Dang it.
Right?
Thank you, Anthony. This has been such a great conversation, such a good organic one. And we've needed this. I'm excited for this information to get out there. And I guess in closing, my final question for you is, what would you say to the woman who, and we talked about this pre-roll a little bit, but what would you say to the woman who's like, oh my gosh, I'm going to buy this workbook on Amazon and I'm going to sign my husband up and send him to this. What would you say to that woman? How could she present this new information she might be hearing that she thinks might help their marriage heal?
I would say, have him listen to the podcast. Like sometimes that's an easier in, so he can get it on his own. And then you can invite. Sometimes if people are forced to do stuff, then it's less impactful. There's tools in here that are going to help him to be able to communicate and to be able to work through conflict and to be able to connect with her and join with her that you know, he probably didn't learn how to do. So as men, we're generally not socialized to pay attention to feelings and then add addiction and trauma and other diagnoses on top of it. And so we're coming to the table late, but better late than never. And you can make a difference.
Yes, and amen to that. And I'll just throw in here that Jen and I are accepting new clients at this time. So beautiful woman out there listening to this, if you're discouraged, if pursuing your own healing is hard, if you've got some body shame issues or identity issues, Jen and I can help you. We can talk with you, listen to you, and be here for you while your husband gets to that place where maybe he would be willing to take that step to contact Dr. Anthony Walker and join one of his Help Her Heal groups. So however we can help you, we will put contact information in the show notes. We're here for you on this path. You're not alone. Thank you, Anthony, for this great conversation. This was really fun, actually, and very, very just authentic and warm today. I really appreciated the camaraderie. Thanks for being here.
Enjoyed it. Thanks for the invite.
Thank you for joining us for this episode of the Betrayal Recovery Transformation Podcast with your hosts, Chris Rocha and Jen Howie. We hope you've been helped and encouraged. If you value the content we shared today, please feel free to rate, subscribe, and leave a review. This helps others find the show. Need personalized guidance? Please contact Chris or Jen for transformative coaching. This episode has been brought to you by HealingWithTheHowies.com, WatermarkCoach.com, and with the support of Pure Life Alliance Ministries.